We've been in the midst of this series in the book of Hebrews, where we've been calling it Deconstruct, where, again, the book of Hebrews is a book of philosophy that teaches us the why of our faith. If you've grown up in church, you've probably been told about what to believe, what to do, how to act, and things like that. But too often, we don't struggle with the why question. I think I may have mentioned this before, we used to do these events called Disciple Now Weekends, where we would gather teenagers together. And one of the years, we would always have T-shirts that we would give out. And one year on the T-shirt, it said on the front, "Ask me, I'm a Christian." And on the back, it said, "Ask me why." And people, the kids, we wore those to church on Sunday, and people were like, "Oh, ask me why." They never wore them again because they didn't want to answer that question again. And they were like, "I don't know." I was like, "All right, we need to learn how to say why we're Christians." And it's funny because many of us that have been Christians 10, 20, 30 years still would struggle with the why. We would think, well, you know, heaven, or it's just the way my family was. But the actual being able to articulate the why is what the book of Hebrews does for us, this book of philosophy that teaches us that Jesus is both completely, he's different and complete. He's different than any way God has ever communicated to us, and now he is complete in the complete revelation of God as well. And then 2 weeks ago, Jared kind of, we started the turn. So we've been deconstructing for the first 10 chapters, and now the last three chapters, we're starting to reconstruct things, put them back together to say, okay, now if we really believe this is who Jesus is, Jesus says this about himself, and we have all these philosophies to live by, now what do we do with it? And I love Jared a couple weeks ago when he talked about the first thing we do is live by faith, right? To have faith that actually is motivated in our life, that we believe that God is and God is good, that there is a God and he is good. And it was a beautiful reminder that of that, out of that soil of faith, everything else in our life is birthed. And now today in chapter 12, we're going to get to the next step of what this why of Christianity, now that we're putting it back together, what does it mean for us? And today we're going to talk about our own character, a character that develops, that you and I should have character development in our life. I love to read. I love to read nonfiction books. Fiction and nonfiction, but I love, like, you know, just sagas, like 7-volume books. I've read all the Harry Potter stuff. My favorite of all time, those Lord of the Rings. I just love Lord of the Rings. I could watch those movies anytime they're on. Sit down, watch the extended version. 3 days later, you know, you're done kind of deal. They're so long and so deep. And I'm still upset that there's things they didn't put in the extended version. But what I love about that is that you really are in that story, these over 3 books, following the journey of one primary character, Frodo, who his character develops from this little hobbit in a hole to somebody who literally saves the world. And you see his character grow and develop. And the things about him that were true early stay true. It doesn't like transform to a whole different person, but he grows and develops. And this is what Hebrews 12 talks about. As we start to reconstruct, put ourselves together, we should be people that have a growing character that develops, that we aren't the same person today that we were last year, 10 years ago, and we're not going to be the same person that we were in 10 years from now. We are going to develop new things in our life. And in chapter 12, basically what the writers of Hebrews do is they talk about 3 characteristics, 3 characters that you're going to be throughout your journey. Throughout your journey in this faith that Jared talked about a couple of weeks ago, these are things that you are going to be, and you need to develop in these. Some are good and some are bad. And so we're going to look at these and how we deal with them today. And so we're going to start in chapter 12. I'm going to read verses 1 and verse 4 together, and then we're going to talk about what the first character that we are in this. And so it says this: "Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before you." Verse 4, "If you struggle in your struggle against sin, you have not yet resisted to the point of shedding your blood." The first character that I want you to see that we all are is that we're sinners. We are sinners. This talks about this in this book. Now, we think Christianity, we would never want to identify as a sinner, right? Like, that's not who we are. We often equate sin to there's just something bad that we do in this feeling of guilt, and if I can stop doing this, then I won't feel guilty anymore. And we get this cycle in our life of like, oh, I do an action that's sinful, I regret it, now I feel guilty, got to pay some kind of penance for it, and then I'm done, and then I did it again, and then I've got to feel bad about it, and we just feel this cycle of doing this, and we equate this idea that sin is just an action. But what this passage reminds us is this, that our struggle with sin is more than just about stopping to doing things. It's about dealing with issues in our heart, dealing with things that go on in our life. And this is going to be a lifelong thing for us. This is not something we're going to be done with one day. And I think I got some of the most freedom in my life one day when I realized that I am a sinner. I'm not done sinning. Do I want to sin? No. Am I going to embrace it? Is it what I want to be the number one thing in my life? No, of course not. But I am a sinner. I fail. I struggle. I need to grow in areas. And so when I do that, it helps me deal with it than just try to avoid it. And too often, I think we just try to avoid sin than actually dealing with it. And our approach to sin should not be about feeling guilty. It should instead be grieving the things that are going on in our heart, that we are actually, it breaks our heart that we're maybe not growing, we're not developing in this. So I want to ask this question then, if we're sinners, what is sin? What is it? And in this passage, it uses three words. It equates sin first to a weight, right? A weight. So what is a weight? It's something that holds you back, holds you down, weighs you down in the pursuit of the holiness of God. It's something extra that you carry on your journey that you actually don't need. My brother, Jay, is an avid hiker. He's been hiking the Appalachian Trail. He walks every day. His Instagram is, I think, something hike with Jay. He just loves to hike. And he walks. He's Instagramming while he's walking. Like, I'm like, go for it, man. That's not me, but he loves it. He just loves to do it. And as we've talked about this, like, the first time he went hiking, like, I think his pack weighed 50 pounds. And he's like, I need this. And now, like, he's got this little knapsack. Like, he's got it down to just the essentials, because anything else that weighs him down becomes a burden the longer you're on the trail. And he's learned to take just what he needs. And this is what sin is. It's a weight on us. It's something we don't need, but yet we keep holding on to it. In our pursuit of God, it weighs us down. And it just keeps us from actually pursuing with all of our heart, with endurance, to move forward. And we often wonder why we get tired in this life, why things seem to be, we don't get going anywhere. We're just going again and again and again in circles. And it's oftentimes because of a weight of sin. But it also says that it's something that clings to you, right? Something, and what I would call this, when it clings to you, it's something that we use to fill a God-given desire that will actually never satisfy us. Something that we like, but we don't really need, right? So you think the easiest example of this is like candy, right? Like, I don't need candy. I like candy. Like, I love candy, but I don't need it. I could go the rest of my life without it. But sometimes I just wake up and I'm like, you know, a piece of chocolate. I just need a piece of chocolate. I really don't need it, but I want it. So this, like, I cling to that. I cling to it. No nutritional value. I mean, I can read studies that a little bit of chocolate a day helps prevent heart attack or whatever, and that's why I eat 3 bars a day, you know, something like that. But we cling to something that we think is what we really need, but it's really not satisfying anything. It's just a quick fix, and we call it something that it isn't, right? We start calling chocolate food. It's not. It's candy. I remember Katie growing up, when we first met and I got to know her, she had for her, still as an adult, she had her blanket that she had as a baby. And she kept it on her bed. We kept it for the longest time. And by the end of it, it had been washed and torn. All we had was that ribbon strip at the top. But she still called it a blanket. And I was like, I don't think it's a blanket anymore, right? I mean, it's just a strip of ribbon. And we actually finally lost it when Natalie was born. It was like her bedding at the hospital. So Katie actually called, did you find a blanket? I was like, they're not going to know what you're talking about when you ask them to look for a blanket. But we do that. We cling to things that we call something, and they have ceased to really have any value in our life, and that's sin. And the third thing it calls here is it's a struggle. It's a struggle. And so when I think about sin as a struggle, it's wanting to move in a direction that we want to go that God doesn't desire for us. Like we know, like, I don't need to be pursuing certain things in my life, or I don't need to be focusing on certain things. I need to be focusing on the thing that God's called me to. But yet I start to still move in that direction. I start to move in a different direction. And it's a struggle when we do that. To me, it's like trying to walk through mud, right? If you've ever been deep in mud and trying to walk through it, it's a struggle versus like swimming with the current, where that's easy. That you're going in the way that God wants you to. It's not a struggle. But when you're moving against what God desires, it's a struggle. And that's what sin is. And so this is the idea I want us to grab this morning about sin, that we should grieve over our reluctance to choose the ways of Jesus. And that's what sin is. We have not, says here, we have not resisted to the point of shedding blood yet. We haven't really been broken deeply over it. We don't ascribe the consequence to sin that it demands, that is actually separating us from God. Sin isn't just an act, it is an attitude. It's something that says, I need this more than God. It's a weight. I feel this will fulfill me more than God. It clings to me. I have more wisdom than God does, and my life is a struggle. Stop fighting against the actions and start grieving about the attitudes of our sin. And so the number one character that we are all in this room sinners. We are. And it's okay to say that. It's okay to say it to one another. It's okay to say, this is what my weight is. This is what's clinging to me. This is what my struggle is, because the way that we operate through those, the way that we turn and develop through that is with others. It's in community. It's being honest to God, honest to ourselves, and honest to others about what these things are that weigh us down, cling to us, and that we struggle with. And so I want us to be free in our church and in our faith family to say, I'm a sinner. I'm growing. Maybe I'm not sinning the way that I was before, but I am developing. It's part of my character development is dealing with the sin that I have. We all have it. But there's a second character, which is we're moving in a better situation now. We're not getting worse here, but this is found in verse 5, and I'm going to read 5, 6, and verse 11, and it says this. It says, and have you forgotten the exhortation that addresses you as sons? My son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord, nor be weary when reproved by him. For the Lord disciplines the one he loves and chastises every son whom he receives. For the moment, all discipline seems painful rather than pleasant, but later it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. And so the second character that we are in our lives is that as sons and daughters. We're sons and daughters. We are children of God. We are part of his family. It says, do not forget the exhortation that he addresses you as sons. Have you forgotten that? Have you forgotten that you are a child of God? We are sons and daughters. We're created, shaped, and formed by his hands. Think about that for just a minute. Just stop and think about that. As much as you wake up in the morning, you look in the mirror, maybe you don't like what you see. Maybe when you internally look at yourself, you don't like the broken parts of your character and the issues and the sin that you find in there. But I want you to think wholly for a minute. The exhortation, the encouragement that God has given us, that we are his sons and daughters. We are his workmanship. You're shaped and formed by him. That's not a mistake. There's a uniqueness about you that God loves and God created in you. No matter how you feel, what you look like, where you're at in your life, where you've been, what's ahead of you, God has formed and shaped you, and you are his sons and daughters. And don't forget that. And this isn't to be taken lightly. And it's the amazing thing that God chose us. He chose us. And now we're in the process of learning to actually then choose him as our father. So this week, we had a major life change in our life. We didn't think we were going to do this again, but we bought two puppies. We got two puppies this week. I think they're coming up. And there they are. That's Chai and Coco. And we went with drink names. That way, I want Chai. But I'm like, we chose them. Like, we went into the pet store, chose them. They are now in the process of choosing us. They're having to figure out home. They're having to figure out who we are, how life operates, how to be a part of our family. And part of that is this idea of how do we approach this family connection, is that we have to approach it not out of duty, but understanding what discipline is. This passage here talks a lot about discipline. And right now we're trying to figure out, we're using discipline with our new puppies to try to figure out to make our life perfect, you know, incorporate them into the family. We watched Oscar, which is Drew and Leslie's dog this week, and that was part of, I think, the tipping point for Katie to finally say, we're going to get some dogs. But Oscar is a phenomenal dog. He's been trained. I remember when Drew and Leslie first got him, they spent a lot of time training him, putting in discipline into his life. And now, like, Oscar was perfect with us this week. And, I mean, he rarely barked. He did all his business outside. He could sit. He shakes. He'll even spin around. He does all these cool tricks. And I wanted our puppies to do that from day one. It's not happening, right? I mean, it's not happening. I don't even know their names yet, right? So there's a lot of work to be done, and this is what discipline is. When we hear that word discipline, and maybe it's your history with it, with family, or how you've experienced it in the past, sometimes we have fear attached to it, right? We have maybe anger attached to it. One dog that we had before, his name was Pepe. He was a rescue dog. And when we got him, if you reached your hand down to pet him, he would draw away because he had his former owner had not been kind to him and had hit him and everything. And so it took a long time and a lot of time until he would finally understand what you're coming to do is show him love instead of anger. And so maybe when you think about discipline, there is that fear or anger. And what I want you to hear out of this passage this morning, when we think about discipline, what is discipline? The discipline of God is three things. First of all, it is expressed out of love. Verse 6 and 7 tells us, he says he chastises those that he loves. And in one passage, it even says he scourges those. Those two words don't sound good to me, chastise and scourge. But here's what they actually mean. Chastise means to train. It actually means to train. And to scourge means to do it repeatedly, to train repeatedly. The one that he receives in the Son, he does this to, which means this, he does not leave us to harmful behaviors. Like our dogs, our two little puppies, they love to run around, get under stuff. They can get under. I didn't realize how many spaces we had, like where there's cords and things like that. And like I could say, oh, there's a cord that they could chew. Now I could just let them go and they have fun and then chew on the cord and electrocute. But I don't want that. You know, so we block things off. We're moving around. We got this little clicker. We're trying to, you know, they say use a clicker. And so we're using a clicker. I think we're using it the right way. But we're trying to train them from doing harmful things to themselves. And we're doing it repeatedly. And this is what God does for us. When he sees us going in harmful directions, he chastises us. He trains us repeatedly to move away from that. And it's out of love. It's not out of harm or out of anger. It's out of love. It's expressed out of love. But the second thing I love about it is experienced through intimacy. Discipline is experienced through intimacy. This is what verse 8 and 9 tells us, that God's discipline is not done at a distance or without a personal approach. Each one of us is different, and God deals with us differently. He understands. He walks with us. He comes alongside of us and disciplines us in a personal, intimate way. I can already tell our dogs have two different personalities, right? One is adventurous. That's Chai, and Coco would sit on the couch on your lap for all day and be happy, right? But they're going to have to be handled a different way and disciplined different way. If you have two kids, you understand there's different ways that you discipline and talk to one and different ways that you talk to another. Natalie, when we were growing up, I would say, this was raising my voice. I would say, Natalie, she was like, stop screaming at me and like run off in tears. I was like, okay, I have to like speak calmly to her. Things like, it's just different. PJ, I could scream at and he'd be like, what? You know, he'd come back at me. So we are just all different ways that you deal with each other. And I love that our God is the God of intimacy when it comes to discipline. It's not some far away slap, thunderbolt of lightning that comes and hits us. He's actually with us. He sits with us. He talks with us and why we're going through this. But then the third thing that it does, it tells us in verse 10 and 11, is this then is expressed, our discipline is expressed through peace. We experience peace. It says that it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness. I love that this passage doesn't say that the goal of discipline is simply obedience, right? That the goal of discipline is actually peaceful righteousness, that we get to live in peace. That takes the weight off my shoulders when I think about discipline, that I'm not just being disciplined to obey and walk in a straight line that I don't agree with, that it's not, you know, I just got to do it out of duty. No, this discipline is actually moving me in a peaceful direction. When I get through this, when I get through this discipline, my life's going to be easier. My life's going to be better. So let us, this is a key idea, let us embrace discipline in order to experience intimacy with our Heavenly Father. Let us embrace discipline. For the moment, it says this, all discipline seems painful rather than pleasant. But we aren't sons because we obey out of duty. We're not sons and daughters simply because we obey. We are sons and daughters because we are growing through a loving, intimate discipline that leads us to peace. So we're sons and daughters. We're sinners. We can admit that. We have broken parts of us that we're going through. And because of that, we're part of a family, God's family. And through that, he's going to discipline us. We don't follow him out of duty, but we allow the discipline of the Lord to come into us to move us to peace and experience intimacy with him. And then verse 12 and 17 lead us to the final character that we grow into. And let me read verses 14 through 16 to us. And it says this. Now then, strive for peace with everyone and for the holiness without which no one will see the Lord. See to it that no one fails to obtain the grace of God, that no root of bitterness springs up and causes trouble, and by it may become defiled, that no one is sexually immoral or unholy like Esau, who sold his birthright for a single meal. So the writers give us a list here, you know, strive for peace, all these kind of things that we are to take into the world. And so the character that brings to mind here, not only as sinners, and now we're sons and daughters, but now we're saints. We're to be saints in this world. We're actually to take the peace that we experience in our life into the world. And so when I think about a saint, though, and somebody who says, you know, be holy and all this stuff, oftentimes it can equate to somebody then being holier than thou, right? Somebody who kind of has an overbearing attitude. And what I want us to see is that this is not about being overbearing. Instead, it's being opportunistic. Opportunistic to show the love of God to people. Not to prove everybody that we're right and they're wrong, to interject ourselves and cause anger and arguments, but instead to find opportunities to do these things that they tell us to do here. And so what are these? What are these opportunities? One, strive for peace. This is the first, and it's probably the hardest. Because you know what I like to do? I like to let people know when I'm right. If they're obviously wrong and I'm obviously right, I don't want them to admit that they were wrong. I want them to admit I was right. Like, it's even when agreement can come, and like it's hard to be a peacemaker. It's hard to be a peacemaker. We like to compare and contrast and put people on different levels and this and that. And that happens not because we're at peace with people. It happens because we have some level of animosity or anger or issues with people that are going on. It is very easy to not keep the peace. There can be little things that happen in our life. Like the other night, Katie and I were going to bed and I was talking about something. We were talking about a TV show and I said something and she didn't agree with it. And she was like, just be quiet and go to bed. And I got mad. I was like, all right, you don't want me to talk? I'm not going to talk. I'm not going to talk in the morning. Like I'll give you 24 hours without me talking. Like I just got angry over something stupid. Like in a moment I could have made peace. And she didn't mean anything by it, but I just took it and no peace. We do that, don't we? Over stupid little things. Whether it's in a marriage relationship, at work, with kids, or somebody even, you know, whatever, wherever you do life, you let things get in and destroy the peace. How do we be saints? We strive for peace. Striving is work. You know, it doesn't just happen. It means you have to work at it. Non-peaceful things happen just by circumstance. Peace we have to strive for. Then it says share the grace. Okay, this gets tougher, right? Okay, I can live at peace maybe. But now I got to like show somebody grace when they're wrong. I don't have to just like, okay, we can live at peace. But now I have to like show them grace. I have to do things that they don't deserve. That's what grace is, unmerited favor. So doing something for somebody when they don't even deserve it, showing them grace, whether that's through forgiveness or just serving somebody that doesn't deserve it. And showing grace. This is an opportunity. This is why it's not just being a saint is not overbearing and proving why we're right and everybody else is wrong. It's actually striving for peace. And then when we get to peace, sharing the grace with others. And then these last two that it tells us to do with deal with issues that are then internal in us. Because the truth is, I can maybe externally strive for peace and do something that is showing grace to people. But inside, if I don't deal with this next one, which is deal with my bitterness, it's going to eat me up inside. And so a saint not only does things externally, but it does it internally as well. That I deal with the bitterness I have in my heart toward people that maybe have wronged me or for no good reason that I'm just holding on to it, or maybe culturally I have differences with people that are creating bitterness in my life. Or man, don't we see this in our world coming out of COVID and just the politicization, or whatever, you know what word I'm saying, of all of the ways that we've dealt with COVID and the different parts of our country have dealt with it. We just, you say the word, in New York, you say the word Florida, and people are like, oh, those crazy people down there. And you go in Florida and you say New York, and they're like, oh, those crazy people. There's just, we use one word and to describe people, and we have this bitterness within us, and we have to deal with it. This is part of the saintly nature of following God, is to deal with bitterness, letting it go, because the truth is it's about bitterness. There's only one object that bitterness hurts, and it's you. You can be bitter at somebody else, and you can be quiet, you can withdraw, but the truth is bitterness eats away at your own soul. It decays your soul from the inside, and that's why you've got to deal with it. Part of being a follower and experiencing this faith is doing that. And then finally, gives a list of things of how to confront immorality in our life, the things that are immoral. And you know, we often, when we talk about immorality, we often get into a list of things. But immorality simply means this. Goes what is against the moral standard that God has determined for how we live. What he's disciplining us for, how he's, the way that we should walk. It's not just doing one bad thing, but it's actually living in a way over and over again, accepting a different moral standard than what God is, we say we espouse as people of faith. So it's choosing to live out of something, out of a moral code. And our faith is not just simply a moral code, but there are morals that grow within us. Having peace with each other, striving for grace, striving for peace, showing grace, dealing with bitterness. These are things that we have to push back against and live out morally. So confront immorality in our own lives. This is what this is talking about. Not culturally, right? Let's start with the immorality in our own hearts and souls, versus just being a spokesperson to the world about the immorality in their lives. And the key is this. Let's now look for every opportunity to display the character of Jesus, to display his character. That's what a saint is. It's a representation of the one that we follow. And so you are a saint. You are. As followers of Christ, as people of faith in here, you have the beauty of being a saint. That's part of your story. You get to strive for peace with people, show grace to others, root out bitterness in your life and deal with the immorality in your own core as you grow in this faith. What a beautiful journey, right? We're sinners. We all are. It's a journey we're on, but we are sons and daughters. We're part of a family with a father who lovingly, intimately disciplines us and moves us in the right way so that then we can live as saints, both externally and internally, to live out this beautiful, beautiful faith. Which brings us to our Jesus philosophy of this week. A life following Jesus is not static or stationary, but it is active and alive. This story of you being a sinner, a son, and a saint, a sinner, a daughter, and a saint, plays out over and over and over in our lives. It's not a one and done. Faith is not a one and done moment. It is an active and alive aspect of who we are. And so our question of the day is this. Which character do I need to better develop my understanding of? Which one of these characters? Do you need to actually talk about your sin? Admit to yourself that you're a sinner? Do you need to embrace the son and daughtership of who you are in God's family? And understand discipline is not something to be angry or fearful of, Or do you need to brace and grow in your sainthood? And the idea of expressing this faith both externally and internally. Which character do I need to better develop to build my life on? Let's pray together this morning. In the quietness of this moment, just take it, think about those three words. Sinner, son or daughter, and saint. We're all those. We get to live a life dealing with those and growing and developing in how we become, how we deal with our sin, how we grow as a son or daughter, and how we live out our sainthood. Just let those words sit with you for a second. Father, thank you that we're on a journey, that this life is not static and still and stale, but we're moving forward. We know we're sinners, but we're growing in how we deal with our sin, and we know we're sons and daughters, but we are going to help us to step more into the discipline that you have for us. And God, help us to live out this sainthood, both internally and externally. God, I know in my own life, I hear these words sometimes, and sometimes they're overwhelming. Sometimes I want to run from each of them. Each of them can be scary in their own sense. I don't like to admit that I'm a sinner. Sometimes I'm fearful of the discipline you'll put on me as a son, and I feel inadequate to live as a saint. But God, you're writing this story in our lives. So allow us to take that story off the page and put it to life, and to live this life fully of faith as we journey on this together.